Thank you, and I want to applaud you for coming out on this cold and damp evening. I am drove down myself from Lubbock, and I am truly impressed by the attendance tonight. This, I think, is the largest group that we've had
by far,
and I congratulate all of you for your interest. Unlike Bob, I assume you're here for your interest in water rather than for the meal. I'll make this a very brief introduction, but by way of background, for those of you who were not at the first two programs of the Texas Water Symposium, the first program was very interesting. We had several water managers who were here, who were speaking from the perspective of both surface water managers and groundwater managers. And to condense an hour of very interesting information into a few sentences, basically the message was, their job as water managers is incredibly complex. They have to balance competing interests and needs and figure out how not only to address current water needs, but also how to plan for water needs in a Texas that's going to have double the population. Something the population projections are like 40 million people by 2050. The second program was on the science of water. Again, a very interesting and diverse panel of scientists who shared with us that our understanding of water issues and the science behind them has increased dramatically over the years. We have many answers to questions that we had in the past, but there are still many unanswered questions, and there's lots of important science that needs to be done. But again, the basic message was that there's not enough developed water supply to meet these future needs that we anticipate. And developing new water supplies or additional ways to use the water we have is not only expensive in terms of dollars, but comes with significant environmental consequences that we talked about. So the message from the first two sessions was that our water is scarce, it should be dear to us, and we absolutely need to use what we have more efficiently, which brings us to tonight and the topic of water conservation. We have four distinguished panelists. I'll introduce each of them individually as they make a presentation. They'll make a brief presentation, each of them from their own perspective, talking about their conservation activities and thoughts. We'll then follow that with a question and answer session where you get a chance to ask either individual panelists or the panel at large questions that you may have come here tonight with certain questions, or maybe the presentations raise questions. Hopefully we'll have an interesting and lively discussion. Our first panelist to set the stage is John Sutton. John is the team leader for Texas Water Development Board's municipal, institutional, commercial, and industrial conservation programs. In Texas, planning and management of water is a state, regional, and local process. John's going to talk to us about the state portion of the process and some programs that they have, and they've actually, I understand, received some additional support from the legislature that's allowed you to expand some of these programs. So with that, John.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity to be here this evening. First, I want to tell you a little bit about the Texas Water Development Board. The board is the state agency that is responsible for providing leadership, planning, financial assistance, information, and education for the conservation and responsible development of water for Texas. The vision for the board is for sustainable, affordable, quality water for Texans, our economy, and our environment. This vision includes our children's children because sustainable means that we have a commitment to future generations. We must envision what kind of world we are passing on to the future. This is the core of our planning process. The programs of the Texas Water Development Board are determined by the legislature and have their roots in the very creation of the agency after the historic drought of record in the 50s, a time when only 8 million people lived in the state. This record drought was almost equaled this past year in Texas, and now we have a population over 21 million. No doubt water conservation and drought have walked hand in hand during our state's history. But even aside from the problems of drought, population growth in Texas, which is predicted to double in 46 million people by the year 2060, continues to add to the demand for water resources. Since 1957, there have been 8 state water plans. The latest plan, Water for Texas, was published in January 2007. This state water plan is based on a bottom-up, consensus-driven approach that projects out 50 years in the future. These plans are revised and reviewed every 5 years. The state is divided into 16 regional planning areas in order to provide local forums for information exchange. Each of these regional water planning areas or regional water planning groups are responsible for preparing and adopting a regional water plan for their area. These regional water plans, these 16 regional water plans, are compiled into the state water plan. The regional water planning groups work with developing the engineering, socioeconomic, hydrological, environmental, legal, and institutional components of the regional water plans. The regional water plans must provide for public input in the planning process, hold public meetings, and furnish a draft report of the plan for public review and comment. Legislation requires that each regional water plan address the needs of all water users and suppliers. In addition, there's also legislation that requires each regional water plan to first take a look at water conservation as a water management strategy for any identified needs in their regional water plan. Some of the conclusions from the 2007 state water plan include: the population in Texas is expected to more than double by 2060, growing from about 21 million to 46 million. At the same time, demand for water in Texas is expected to increase by 27%, from almost 17 million acre-feet of water to 21 million acre-feet. Existing water supplies, and that's the amount of water that can be produced with current permits, contracts, and existing infrastructure during drought, are projected to decrease about 18%. From about 18 million acre-feet to about 14.6 million acre-feet in 2060. This decrease is primarily due to the accumulation of sediments in reservoirs and the depletion of aquifers. Texas is going to need an additional 8.8 million acre-feet of water by 2060. The regional water planning groups identified about 4,500 water management strategies and projects to generate an additional 9 million acre-feet of water supplies for Texas per year. With this additional supply comes cost. It's also estimated that the capital cost to design, construct, and implement the water management strategies and projects would cost approximately $31 billion. There are also consequences if we do not meet this need. If water management strategies are not implemented, water shortages during drought could cost businesses and workers in the state about $9.1 billion per year in 2010 during times of drought. And that's estimated to grow to $98 billion by the year 2060. It's also estimated that about 85% of the state's projected population might not have enough water by 2060 during drought conditions. Traditionally, water management strategies have focused on bringing water into the pipe through dams, reservoirs, and wells. In recent years, however, many communities have begun to focus on end-of-pipe solutions through water conservation. At a fundamental level, water conservation involves managing existing water supplies to reduce demand and increase efficiency of use. In other words, water managers and citizens collectively join forces to use less water in their homes and businesses and on their farms rather than just building new projects to supply more of an already scarce resource. For water utilities and their customers, conservation programs are often more economical because they can help postpone or eliminate the need for new infrastructure, such as dams, wells, pipelines, and water treatment plants. In recent years, the awareness and understanding of water conservation and water use efficiency has grown significantly in Texas. During the development of the 2006 regional water plans, conservation became increasingly as important as a means to meet water supply needs. A comparison of the 2007 state water plan to the 2002 state water plan shows this growing importance of water conservation. For example, the recommended water management strategies for conservation in the 2002 state water plan generated 14% of the water needed to meet the state's needs in 2050, a total of about 990,000 acre-feet. In the 2007 state water plan, conservation accounts for nearly 23% of the required water, a total of about 2 million acre-feet. These figures represent active conservation, measures usually initiated by water utilities, individual businesses, residential water consumers, and agricultural producers to reduce water consumption. Municipal water conservation strategies focus on reducing use through a variety of social or technological approaches. Social approaches include changing rate structures to encourage more efficient water use, creating a greater awareness of the importance of conservation, and through promotional and educational campaigns. For example, programs such as bill explanation, plant tours, school programs, and education and outreach activities have proven beneficial. Technical approaches include installing more efficient plumbing fixtures in homes and businesses. In addition to the development of the state water plan, the Texas Water Development Board provides loans to local governments for water supply and wastewater treatment plants. As one of the requirements to receive funding, entities applying for loans are required to submit conservation plans to help ensure that they are taking a responsible approach to water development. In addition, those entities with 3,300 or more connections are now also to develop water conservation plans. Our agency offers technical assistance to help establish water conservation plans in the development and implementation of programs. In addition, the Texas Water Development Board also provides agricultural water conservation loans and grants to encourage efficiency in agricultural water use. We assist retail public water suppliers with technical assistance in water accountability and water leak detection. We provide low-cost water conservation literature, including brochures for the Water IQ Water Conservation Public Awareness Program. We offer water resource and conservation educational programs for kindergarten through eighth grade, including the Major Rivers Education Program for elementary level students, the Raising Your Water IQ middle school curriculum, and adult workshops on topics such as groundwater. The state water planning process recognizes conservation as one of the most effective strategies to meet future needs. In 2003, Senate Bill 1094 created the Water Conservation Implementation Task Force to evaluate matters regarding water conservation. The task force had a life of about 12 to 18 months and was charged to review, evaluate, and recommend optimum levels of water use efficiency and conservation for the state. They were charged with six different tasks to take a look at, and in that process, they made 25 recommendations regarding conservation, programming, data, and how the state should deal with targets and goals. In 2004, the task force provided the report to the legislature and developed a best management practice guide. This best management practice guide was the basis of conservation strategies that many of the regional water planning groups used during that planning cycle. The task force also recognized the need for promoting public awareness of water conservation issues and recommended implementing a program that will focus on delivering a simple, enduring, universal water awareness message. The main goal of the program is to promote the importance of water conservation and to strive to make all Texans aware that their natural water resources are limited and are not immune to consequences of individual behavior. In 2004, the TWDB contracted with consultants to conduct research to develop a market strategy and a brand for a statewide water conservation public awareness program. The project was funded by a voluntary coalition of 36 water utilities, municipalities, businesses, and conservation groups. Data from the 2004 study show that only 28% of Texans definitely know the natural source of their drinking water. The research also showed a strong connection between the knowledge of water sources and the willingness to conserve. As part of the study, 11 different logos and taglines were tested in focus groups in five cities. Water IQ, Know Your Water, rose to the top as an effective brand because it challenges one to think and be tailored with local information and informative tips. Because of local drought impacts, four significant regional water providers and one groundwater conservation district have embraced the Water IQ campaign concept and are currently implementing pilot projects to establish Water IQ awareness in their service areas. Their efforts will contribute print ads, public service announcements, and television spots that can be used in developing a statewide program. And in each of these five areas, there's been pre- and post-evaluation of the program, and they've seen significant differences in water consumption and water awareness in those areas where these pilot programs have been undertaken. This past spring, the passage of Senate Bill 3 and House Bill 4 by the Texas Legislature, the Texas Water Development Board was directed to appoint members of a newly created Water Conservation Advisory Council. This council is to be an ongoing resource of expertise in water conservation. Council's charged to monitor the effectiveness of statewide water conservation public awareness programs, monitor trends in water conservation implementation, monitor targets and goal guidelines for water conservation, monitor the implementation of water conservation strategies, new technologies for the possible inclusion in the best management practice guide, and develop and implement a state water management resource library. In closing, I'd like to note that all of us, as individuals, water suppliers, or water planners, can all do something. We can all do more to ensure the efficient use of Texas's water. So when asked, what questions can I take to help conserve water for our future, consider the following. Know your water. Make an effort to learn about your own local water supplies. Talk to your children about water use in your own family. Model water conservation to your children by showing them how to be good stewards in your own home, both indoors and out. Talk to your neighbors about water use in your community. Become aware about local water issues. The next round of regional water plans are already being worked on and scheduled to be complete in 2011. If you're interested in taking action, I encourage you to become familiar with the state water planning process, the regional water planning process, and become involved in your own area, your own region. Thank you for your time and interest. If you'd like more information about programs at Texas Water Development Board and the regional water planning process and the state water plan, additional information can be found on our website, www.twdb.state.tex.us. So, thank you.
Thank you, John. John shared with us a little bit about the state planning process and some of the state programs that are underway. Our next speaker is going to look at the similar issues, but from a local perspective. Karen Goose is the Director of Conservation for the San Antonio Water System, and I find San Antonio a very interesting city in that regard. And somewhat embarrassing to somebody like myself from Lubbock, when we look at the record of conservation improvements that San Antonio has made over the last 10 years or so, they've made dramatic reductions in per capita water use, and hopefully Karen will share with us some of what they've done to get to that point and some of their plans for the future. Karen.
Thank you. We appreciate that San Antonio is a city that was thought of when they were talking about water conservation in Texas. And it is true that San Antonians are very proud now of our conservation programs and our record of success, and that really San Antonio has perhaps one of the best programs in the country comprehensively for water conservation. But I say that in all humility because I'm guessing some of you can remember when maybe that wasn't the case from San Antonio. Back in the 90s, San Antonio was faced with some difficult situations, periods of drought, regulatory changes, and quite frankly, not the best reputation as people who were conserving that resource. And so it's a wonderful thing to be able to stand before you today and say that San Antonio as a community made some very smart choices during a difficult time that helped turn that situation around so that conservation is one of the cornerstones of our supply in San Antonio. The community at that time, and I can take no credit because I came to the community as those things were getting done, set goals, determined that conservation was going to be a big part of the supply in the future in San Antonio, dedicated funding to conservation. And what I mean by that is it's in our rate structure. In the rates that we collect from our customers every month, there's money that goes into a pool for conservation. And so when you hear me talk about the investment we put back, it's ratepayer money that gets put into conservation, and then it goes back to them, and we hope it's a bargain. And then they also established citizen input groups in San Antonio. So it's all driven by our community leaders, and that's a big part of the success, is that we have constant oversight and input by the same community leaders who made that decision to make conservation a part of our supply. Since that time, San Antonio has invested about $5 million a year for the past 10 years. That's a lot to invest, so our citizens would be smart to say, well, what are we getting back for it? Here's the soundbite version. Our gallons per capita has gone down, but the astounding result is that San Antonio pumps about the same amount of water out of our aquifer that we did about 15 years ago. And yet we've had about 40% growth in that time. We have one of the fastest housing markets in the country. We have. We've had good prosperity, and we still have a good quality of life. And yet we're doing that with the same amount of water that we used to think we couldn't get along without. So that's really a remarkable result for that investment by the citizens. And it's a great job. I'm very lucky to be part of the job. What I say to people is that we are here in water conservation to make you a deal. And here's the deal that we're going to try to make for you. You as citizens have decided to dedicate this revenue source and entrust it to the water system with the Citizens Committee's help. And then our goal is to find ways that we can change your habits or find you some new technology that's going to help you save water. And by the way, while we're at that, we bet you we're going to do it and improve your quality of life. This is not about deprivation. That's another great part of the story, is that a lot of the things we can do in conservation, the technologies or the things that people change, don't make them feel like they're having a worse life. Maybe they're going to like that landscape better that they have now than what they had prior. We are going to bet you that if you had one of the toilets that San Antonio Water System gives out, you're going to like it better than your old one. We give you a shower head, you're going to like it better than what you had before. So we hope, improve your quality of life. Secondly, we're going to save you some money. If you're a business customer or you're a residential customer, your water bill is going to go down. So how great is that? Everybody likes to save money, so that's a good thing. And then the big picture, though, is that we're doing all that at a rate that is cost-effective for the greater community. When we analyze the numbers on what it costs to go get new supplies, that is expensive, and it's never going to get cheaper, is it? And nobody's ever happy with the new water supply projects. We try, and we are diversifying our water supplies, but conservation is the better bargain. If we can save water at a cost of about $200 to $400 an acre foot, and that's less than half of the cheapest new water supply, isn't that a deal? So that's a deal for the greater community, too. So all around, conservation is one of those, it's overused to say win-win, but it really is true that conservation is something where we have that pleasant experience of being able to do the right thing and have everybody come out of it ahead. Now, what do we do? People ask me, can you summarize what all you do? You have a lot of programs in San Antonio, but what's the basics? I like to break it down into what we call, there are three pillars to a successful conservation program. One of them is our favorite, and that's the incentives and rebates. That's the fun part where we're going to find that technology or thing we're going to get you that we think you're going to like better than what you had before. So sometimes that means we're going to give you a shower head to replace the old one that uses maybe 5 gallons a minute. We're going to give you one that uses 1.75 gallons a minute, and you're going to think it's great, and you're going to save a lot of water in your house. And you're going to do it at a cost per acre foot rate that it's worth it to us to give it to you if you're our customer. So that's a simple example. We also have rebates for washing machines. We gave away 28,000 toilets in 2007. That's a lot of potties, isn't it? But that's millions of gallons of water, and people love those things. I have to tell you, we also work with commercial customers. We just have gotten into, we worked with a lot of businesses, but hotels are lining up now. They're realizing that these products are good. And if the 4-star hotels in San Antonio can put them in and get a 40% drop in their water consumption during their peak capacity and have their customers happy at that 4-star hotel, we can make you happy at your home. So that's one, incentive and rebates. The second is education and outreach. And John talked about this on the state level, the Water IQ campaign. We've been working with public announcements in San Antonio and also doing things with school-age children and working with community organizations like Master Gardeners and other community partners to really change the mindset in San Antonio. If any of you have ever been in my department and there's water running down the street somewhere in the city, the phone's ringing. Our citizens find it absolutely unacceptable if there's water waste going on, if there's watering in the middle of the day. It is a conservation-minded town, and that's very different from the way it was 12 years ago. So changing those habits is important, and that's a big part of what we do, is keeping that mindset, helping people realize that they can still have a great quality of life and not water their lawn as much as they used to. It'll still look great. And then the third thing is what I refer to as sensible regulation. Maybe some people are shaking their heads and saying there's no such thing, that's an oxymoron. You can't have sensible regulation. Well, sometimes you can. We work with our citizen committees on these incentives and rebates and the education programs. And then sometimes as a conclusion, quite often, what happens is the community starts to say, you know what, we've been giving an incentive for, say, rain sensors in San Antonio for 6 years. These devices work. They don't cost very much. Everybody hates watering in the rain. Around 2005, the consensus was, why don't we just make it a rule that everybody just has to have a rain sensor, whether it's a new irrigation system or an old one or not, and phase it in, let everybody know, and get it over with, so we can move on to the next thing we have to get done. Sensible regulation, we hope. Reasonable. It's going to save people money anyway, so let's do it. It's also illegal to waste water in our community, so that's another one. So we work these things out with the community as to what that sensible regulation means. And then that extends to our drought periods, too, by the way, how we manage our times of special scarcity. That's a different animal from long-term conservation, but that's another time when that community-led regulatory partnership is important, where we sit down with the stakeholders and say, this is what we're trying to accomplish. What do you think? Can you work with us? And we get a remarkable response. Almost all the time, I am thrilled to say that when I go out and have to talk to the manufacturers' associations, the real estate councils, irrigation associations in San Antonio, the response we get back is, what can we do to help? And that's a wonderful reaction from 10 years of working on it. Now, what's next is what the other thing people sometimes ask me. Are you running out of options? You've changed a lot of toilets. You've given out shower heads. What are the next things? Well, we've got new challenges and we've got new technologies all the time. A few things I'd urge you to watch out for that you're going to maybe start seeing in your markets. Nationally, the Environmental Protection Agency is partnering to create something called WaterSense. This is much like, maybe you've heard of Energy Star. Well, start looking for WaterSense. WaterSense is going to be a logo that you're going to see on faucets, shower heads, and high efficiency toilets. These are toilets, by the way, that use less than 1.6 gallons per flush, and they work. And so what they're doing is figuring out what saves the water at least 30% and works. In San Antonio, I've run the numbers. If every home that's a new home in San Antonio went into those standards, we'd save 250 million gallons a year just in the San Antonio region on our new homes. So those little things add up to a lot. So start looking for water sense. Okay, he's giving me the signal here. I'm going to wrap it up. Also, another very encouraging thing that's happening nationally is there's a new organization called the Alliance for Water Efficiency. There has not been, prior to now, believe it or not, a national organization that leads efforts in having a clearinghouse for conservation across the country, so that if you're a smaller community wanting to get started and you're looking for the resources, you've got the Water Development Board here, but it's nice to have a national organization as well. They're going to be coming to San Antonio and actually doing a workshop for utilities in March, aimed especially at those communities that are maybe just trying to get started in water conservation. And so that's something that is also extremely exciting. So there's new things, new challenges. You don't have to be a big community like San Antonio in order to get started. I'd encourage folks to say, get that citizens committee started. You don't have to, you're probably better at that than the big towns if you're a smaller community. Figure out where your revenue is going to come from to fund your programs and set your priorities, and you can be extremely successful at it. If you are interested in more on the San Antonio Water System conservation programs and more background on that, a place that you can go for information on our efforts is www.saws.org. And then you can click on conservation. You'd be able to see a lot of background on the various programs that we offer. So thank you very much. I appreciate the time and you including us in the program.
Thank you, Karen. Our next panelist is Dr. Ken Kramer, the chapter director of the Lone Star chapter of the Sierra Club. Dr. Kramer has more than 25 years of experience in water and environmental issues, not only as an environmental group leader, but also as an academic and a public policy specialist. He served on numerous state and other task forces and committees, and represents a group that I'm sure you all know is known for the strong environmental interests of its membership. I'm sure this evening Dr. Kramer will share some of his observations regarding conservation from those various diverse perspectives. Dr. Kramer.
And to make use of the bottled water source here. Don't tell anybody in Sierra Club I'm drinking bottled water tonight, okay? I appreciate the opportunity to be here tonight. I'm always very happy to go anywhere and talk about water. I have had 25 years of experience as a professional in terms of environmental advocacy, working on water and other issues. I actually have much longer experience than that with water from some other backgrounds. I was at one time a university professor, both for Angelo State University out in San Angelo, as well as for Texas A&M University in College Station. And I taught courses in water resources policy and environmental policy at that time, did a lot of research on water. In fact, the first Texas water plan that I ever analyzed and made comments on was the 1977 version of the Texas water plan. I'm not sure what the 2002 and 2007 iterations are, but there have been several water plans since the first one that I looked at. And there was a previous one back in 1968, which actually I cast my first vote as a Texas voter in a 1969 special election on the financing of that water plan. And frankly, I voted against it. And the water plan financing went down to defeat, by the way. And one of the reasons for that, both my opposition and I think the opposition of a majority of Texans at the time, was that the water plan of the 1960s and several iterations since that time have emphasized development of water projects rather than what we feel to be the top priority, and that is making efficient use of the existing supplies of water, managing them better, conserving where we don't need to waste water before we really go forward and make huge investments in new projects. And that's really part of the perspective that environmental organizations bring to this whole debate and discussion about our water future, is that while there certainly are times when we need to go out and develop new water projects for growing populations and other economic needs, if you look very closely at the water needs of the future, I think you'll see that there's an opportunity for us to get much farther down the road with conservation and efficiency than we've been able to do thus far, and potentially avoid, or at least delay, a lot of unnecessary, expensive, and potentially environmentally harmful development projects. So that's the perspective that we bring to this discussion about water. Although I think all the panelists here tonight are strong advocates of water conservation, no matter what our particular backgrounds may be. One of the things that I would like to inform everyone about tonight in order to help you continue your process of informing yourself about water is that the Sierra Club is partnering with two other state environmental organizations here in Texas, National Wildlife Federation and Environmental Defense, in a joint project called the Texas Living Waters Project. This project has actually been going on for a little bit over 7 years now, almost 8 years. And we have, as three partner organizations, attempted to basically educate Texans more and more about their water sources, about how to deal with them sensibly, to try to preserve the state and the environment of the state, as well as accommodate our population and a growing population at that. We have focused on things like making water use more efficient, preserving water in rivers and streams for fish and wildlife habitat, for water quality, for livestock watering and other purposes like that, preserving freshwater inflows into bays and estuaries, trying to achieve sustainable use of our groundwater supplies as our population grows and more pressure is being put upon those supplies, and trying to involve more and more people in the decision-making about our water future. We have a website for our project that's www.texaswatermatters.org. Texas Water Matters is all one word. And I encourage the people who are here tonight and listening to the radio broadcast of this program to take a look at that website, because it has a lot of information that's specifically provided for citizens to have a better understanding of the decisions that are being made about their water future and how they can participate in that decision-making process. I think that from a perspective as an advocate for a citizens organization, that the more we can involve as many Texans as possible in the decisions about water, the better off we will be, and I think we'll make more sensible decisions as a result of that. One of the things that really encourages environmental advocates to get involved in the water conservation aspect of water policy is the fact that we believe that by doing so, we can stretch existing supplies of water and preserve more of the water in streams and in our aquifers for the benefit of fish and wildlife and people. And that is really a compelling motivation for our involvement in much of the legislation that's been passed over the past 25 to 30 years in the state that deals with water and water conservation. It was part of our motivation for being involved in litigation in the Edwards Aquifer region back in the 1990s to try to help light a fire under some of the entities using water from the aquifer to be more aggressive in water conservation. We like to think that we take a small amount of credit for San Antonio's success in moving toward more water conservation. And I do want to applaud the city of San Antonio for really rising to the occasion and really taking the immense pressure that was put upon the city through that whole process of litigation and related events and really making a model of how a major city could dramatically change its approach to water and achieve such astounding water conservation success. Now we have to work on getting Dallas, for example, to do that as well, and a few other cities that maybe don't have quite as sterling a record. And that is one of the things that really is a focus for the Sierra Club and the environmental community in Texas right now, and I think all water conservation advocates, is to try to take the models that have been demonstrated as successful in areas like San Antonio, like Corpus Christi, for example, like El Paso, and make them more universal among the cities and towns of the state. The one, I think, really optimistic thing about all this is that if you look at water and how we make decisions about water and how we shape the future of water, water conservation is an area where each one of us individually can make a small effort that together adds up to a great success and a great achievement. Each one of us can look at our own water use and see how we may be more efficient in our use of water and make strides in that regard that really do add up to a great savings in water, and that can be a model to our friends and our neighbors as well. So although my organization, Sierra Club, and our other advocacy groups push for legislative changes and policy changes that we think will help to encourage, to provide incentives for, to facilitate, to make it easier for, and in some cases require water conservation, we don't have to rely just upon trying to get government to pass certain laws, fund certain projects, establish new programs for water conservation. Each one of us can actually make a difference in our own household. Now, I will probably admit to you that the greatest personal accomplishment that I've had in water conservation in the past year is that I sent my teenage daughter off to college in California, thereby dramatically improving the household gallons per capita per day consumption in my household from the use of a shower each day alone. I will say that my daughter did come to the realization during her last 2 years in high school that if she took shorter showers in the morning, she could actually sleep later. So there is that awareness, too, that's a part of what we're trying to achieve in this state with water conservation. But all kidding aside, I think that if each one of us look more closely at our own water use, we would probably find ways in which we can improve the efficiency of our water use and not really have any negative impact at all on our lifestyles or our everyday lives. And I think that's a very positive thing. One of the things that I want to point out is that in Texas in the past several years, we've actually made great strides in water conservation, not just in terms of some shining examples like the progress that the city of San Antonio has made, but also in terms of our ability to get new laws adopted and new programs established and new initiatives started at the state level and in many localities around the state. I had the privilege in 2004 of being on the Water Conservation Implementation Task Force that John Sutton from the Texas Water Development Board mentioned earlier in this evening's program. And we came up with what I think was, with the help of consultants and staff of the Water Development Board, a very good best management practices guide that had water conservation best management practices for municipal governments and other retail water suppliers, for agricultural producers, especially irrigation, irrigated agricultural producers, and also for industries in the state. And that best management practices guide, which is available from the Water Development Board's website, also available on a CD, has been widely distributed around the state and has been used by most, not necessarily all, but most of the regional planning entities in the state that have been working on regional water plans for the past several years. That particular achievement, I think, was basically pulling together a lot of the best thoughts about how water conservation could be done by retail water suppliers, by industry, by agricultural producers, and providing that information in a relatively compact form and an easy to review and understand form. And that kind of education has had, I think, a very important impact in terms of the thinking of a lot of people about water conservation at those different levels. And, you know, one of the things that I find really rewarding about the whole issue of water in the state and water conservation is that the more people do know about water, the more valuable they see water and the greater ownership they take of water, and the more activity and effort you find going on as a result of that. This is really, I think, an issue where public education does have a dramatic impact just through education alone. Just by people being informed about their source of water, about the pressure on water supplies, about the opportunities to save water, you see some dramatic impacts in terms of how they use water and how they shape their own decisions about water. And as a person who has been involved in the education arena for many years, I find that very rewarding and very encouraging. I'm especially encouraged by the turnout of all of you here tonight because it demonstrates that you've got an interest in water and a commitment to water that is probably not necessarily the norm among the majority of people in this state. And one of the things that I find as a person who grew up with one foot in rural Texas and one foot in urban Texas, I grew up in Houston primarily, but my parents both grew up on cotton farms in Austin and Washington County, and I spent a lot of time on my grandparents' farms as a kid, is that people who come from the more rural parts of the state, generally speaking, have a much better appreciation and understanding of water than a lot of people who live in Texas cities. Now, San Antonio is, I think, sort of the exception to that rule in the sense that, for a lot of reasons, including the litigation that we were involved in, there's a much higher awareness of water in San Antonio than most other urban areas of the state in terms of the source of their water, the need to protect it, et cetera. But in many cities in Texas, frankly, I think it doesn't surprise you to know that what people think about water is that if you turn on the faucet, it's there and everything's fine. If you turn on the faucet and it's not there, then you have a water problem. Well, there's a lot more to it than that. And most people from the more rural areas of the state have a better understanding of that. I think our job as Sierra Club, other members of the environmental community, and all of us here tonight is to spread that awareness of the value of water to as many people in the state as possible, to provide them with the tools by which they can better their efficient use of water, and try to make it clear to the political leaders of our state that this is an issue that we need to continue to promote and make new strides and successes in. So one of the thoughts I want to leave with you tonight is that in terms of water, there are a lot of aspects of water that many of us fight about. But probably the one issue among all the water resources issues where you will find that the majority of people, at least once informed about the issue, can come to consensus is the need to be more efficient in our use of water. Because if we are more efficient in our use of water, then it's much easier to tackle those other more divisive issues related to water among all the issues that we have to face. It's much easier to preserve fish and wildlife if we can conserve water in the first place, so we don't have as much pressure on water development that could negatively affect fish and wildlife. That's where Sierra Club and other environmental interests come from. We want to be sure that we make our water future something that we can uphold as a process that achieves success for everybody. And the way to do that, at least the first step, is to be more efficient in our use of water. So I hope that all of you will take away from this program tonight at least the thought in your head, how can I be more efficient in my use of water, and how can I be a model to my friends and neighbors in conserving water that will have a beneficial impact for how we address all water issues in the state. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. Our final panelist is Billy Niffen, who is the County Extension Agent for Menard County. By way of background, when the sponsors for the Water Symposium were planning tonight's program, they decided that in addition to having panelists who could describe some of the general issues related to conservation and some, I'll give you a brief glimpse of some of the conservation programs that are being utilized around the state and some of the priorities and issues that are related to conservation, it might also be interesting to take a little bit more in-depth look at least one of the strategies that are being used to make more efficient use of the water that we have. Billy Niffen is going to talk to us about one strategy that is has become more popular and received more consideration in recent years, and that is what's sometimes called rainwater harvesting. In addition to his responsibilities as County Extension Agent, Mr. Niffen also is the president, I understand, of the newly formed Texas chapter of the American Rainwater Catchment Association. So in some ways an old strategy has been resurrected as a new strategy, and Mr. Niffen, we're interested to hear about it.
Well, I thank you all for being here. Some of you are master naturalists. In fact, as many of you are here, and I appreciate you being here, even though I am on the program, and listening to the others as part of maybe continuing education and advanced training for you, and I thank you for being here. I want to share, I guess, some of the things that what we can do and take home to your own place, what you can do as on your place, on your home, as to improve that water and help San Antonio and Austin to get a little better quality of water as well. One of the things that we can do is certainly we like to think that what rainfall that we get on our place, if we don't capture it and use it, all we do is send it downstream as storm water, taking our soil along with it. And those from downstream that get their lakes filled up with our water say thank you. But if we are in our own mind. The country folks, we like to keep what comes on our place and get use of it. And so I think if we look at rainwater capture and rainwater on our place, I think we have a different perspective. And so some things that you can do, and the first of those, from a master naturalist perspective, from a ranching perspective, from a country boy's perspective, is looking at on our land, in our backyard, on our ranch land, and that's capturing it there. And it's very important that we capture the water that lands on our land, in our pastures, and so that it gets into the ground, recharges our aquifer, fills up that spring, keep the springs and streams flowing. And so we send high-quality water downstream. But in the same time, we get plants that get to utilize that water. We get to grow. We keep our soil in place. And we get good use of that water. So it's very critical that we use it. And so that ties in management of our land. And I think that's the first raindrop that we need to be mindful and be a steward of as it lands on our land. And so as we look at our land, we need to make sure to look back in history what made those springs flow and how many springs do not flow anymore that used to. And as we look at that, there's a big change that's happened in the last 100 years. A lot of that has to change in the vegetation that's on our land. What used to be a tall grassland prairie or a mixed grass prairie over much of this area and now is a very short grass, almost a forested area of cedar and live oak, and very little of those tall grasses that are the most critical in trying to put water back into the ground. They are the ones that have a deep fibrous root that capture, slow that water down, put it into the ground, and recharge our aquifer and recharge our springs. And so if we are not stewards of all the water that lands on our land, on our soil, then we've made the first mistake, and those are the things that we have to do. And there's lots of things we can do to improve that, and we need to look at ways we can reduce the amount of woody cover on much of our hill country land and replace it with those tall grasses, and they're very critical that we do that. And so as we look at the things we can do, that's the first step that we need to do. The other thing we do is look at when it lands on our roof, what can we do? And there's lots of things we can do. Not only can I put it in a storage catchment container of some kind, but when it falls off of our roof, we're in a mindset that when it hits our, that is bad water, and we try to get it off of our yard as quick as we can. And so we try to push as much water away from our house and create storm water that destroys riparian areas and our stream banks as it goes down in a fast, rapid manner. And so we need to look at ways we can manage and change our landscape so that water that falls off of our roof, we can catch it in a passive way and keep it there and put it back into the ground and get good use of it. I'm supposed to be on a workshop in Santa Monica, California in March, in which they're going to have a run-in conference instead of a run-off conference, learning how we can catch that water and be positive in its use rather than trying to send it off and get rid of it. And so if we start looking at a way we can change our landscapes, one of the ways is what's being done now is called rain gardens. And that's where we're catching water in there. Kansas City is in the process right now of a 3-year project to establish 10,000 rain gardens in the city of Kansas City to get water back into the ground, improve water quality, reduce storm water and sedimentation that's going off into our river. And so that is one thing we can do is look in our landscape, get in that water. This is not a stock pond. It's a technique in which we put water into a very shallow area that's designed to go back into the ground within 24 or 36 hours. And so we can put plants in there that help move that water down and use it as part of our landscape design. We can also change our landscape so that we do it as on a contour as well and hold that water and get use of it and move it towards our plants. As I was driving through San Angelo this other, I believe a couple of days ago, they're changing some of that median in which they're putting in trees in there, and they're trying to funnel that water from all that median area there into where those trees are rather than trying to push it off into the street. So we can change that. Is a passive way, very easy way, that I can put that water and get it back in the ground, get use of it, rather than send it off. The other thing we can do is really try to catch it in a container, and that's what I do at my house, and that's what a few of you here do as well. We talk about being able to conserve water. When I have my total source of water for my house and my wife is in some polyethylene containers, and there's no other source of water there except if I go and tell my brothers I've run out of water and I need some from them, and I will not do that. So I learned to be conservative. Anytime I can see how much water I have in a container, I know how much I've got. I have meters. I can tell you how much we use on a daily basis, and I can tell you when I'm gone how much my water my wife used while I was gone as well. And so we start really getting a different concept of what water is and how we can use it. But as we talk about catching, and this is what I call a more complex or an active system, where I catch it off of some roof and put it for some purpose. And there's lots of different ways we can use that. Out in the Big Bend area in far west Texas, they're using it to catch water for supplying water for wildlife. They've reintroduced a bighorn sheep to that western area there by catching water and having water supplies for them where there was no other water supply out there. And they're continuing to do those, and those have been very successful out there. We can use it in many parts of our, even in our backyard as a bird bath, by catching rainwater and using it for them or for wildlife or for our pets. I have a lady that's in Alpine that catches rainwater strictly for her hot tub. That's the only water that goes in her hot tub is the rainwater. So she catches off our roof, puts all that water in there. Any excess, she uses it on her landscape. But that's her source and what that water is used for there. But we can also use it for our landscape purposes. We can change our landscape. When we start looking at turf, that's the biggest user of water. When we talk about the showers that our daughters take, they are minute compared to how much water our turf takes. And so as we start looking at a turf, and maybe we can implement some design change in there, and so we reduce the turf, but I can use my irrigation from my rainwater, drip irrigation preferably, and I can change that landscape, put some beautiful plants out there that attract butterflies, hummingbirds, and enjoyment for me. And rather than being a child, stepchild, as our turf is, it needs to be mowed, fertilized, watered, treated, we can sit out there and enjoy those benefits of it. And so I can use it for my landscape. I can use it for wildlife. I can have it and use it for my pets as well. I have one in Menard that uses it strictly for their water feature. They catch it off of their house, and they have a large water feature with a big waterfall, and it runs down into a stream, and that's totally supplied by rainwater. And so I can use it, and they have a high-quality water that will supply that purposes. But I can also use it inside my house, and that's what we do. And we can use it inside our house for non-potable uses with very little extra work. I can use it in my washing machines and use it in our toilets. We have one system there in Menard at our gymnasium, senior citizen area, which we have a 30,000-gallon collection system there catching off of a gymnasium. And it's designed to go into the toilets, which I haven't finished yet, but hopefully it will soon, but also used for landscape purposes as well as to reduce the amount of stormwater that would send down through our streets and down into our river. And so we can use larger systems like that to help in a number of different ways. And so I can do it with that without a lot of extra effort, or I can go to all the way through the process of going ahead and filtering that water and then go ahead and use through some kind of sanitation if I want to, or preferably use, and use it for total supply inside my house. And so as we do that in our house, that's what goes into our ice machine, that's what we drink, that's what we use for a shower. We can do all of those things with it. With our metering, knowing what we use, we have reduced our water supply needs per capita per day on our 5 acres is about 20 gallons per person per day. Fact is, a little bit less than that if we're conservative. But we've actually been about 18 gallons per water per person per day in what we use, and that says we're very conservative. We've learned how to reduce those showers. In fact, is we had a meter that or a timer that we put up in our upstairs bathroom for our daughter-in-law and daughter that they could measure their shower length. My daughter-in-law took it, but broke it before she could ever tell us how long a shower she took. But we learned those things, and I've learned how to take a shower when it only runs 2.5 minutes. It's called sort of a navy shower. But we can do things like that. We learn to conserve. When I have guests in my house, we instruct them that we turn the water off. And so they learn as well. So we can pass that on to them. But there's lots of things going on. There's so much interest in the state of Texas. I've talked with them in Georgia in recent times. They don't even know what rainwater harvesting is. They've had so much rainfall, supposedly, over the years that they don't believe there is such a thing as a water shortage, but they do now. And they're desperately trying to learn what we've already learned about rainwater capture and using it. There's one person I talked with this weekend, and said, well, all they know is just maybe catch some and use it in the landscape. But they're learning, and the learning curve goes real fast when there becomes a need. And so those are things that we can do. There is a Texas Association that's just being formed. We are probably the leaders in the nation in rainwater harvesting in the state of Texas, and we have the number of people that are installing systems that are supplying. A lot of technology comes out of Australia and Germany. They're bringing that technology here because they know we're the biggest market right now for that use of those products. And so it's a growing industry. It's becoming to the fact that we know that it can work. I put in an article about 2 weeks ago that I first started out. I'd hoped that I could do that in Menard and wouldn't have to be apologizing for something that wouldn't work. But I put in there, I think I may be the last person in Menard to run out of water whenever that drought really does come. I can live almost a year with what we have without a single rainfall when my tanks are full. And so I can live with 4 inches of rainfall a year inside my house, and I do like some landscape, and I can increase that up and double that and use less than 9 inches of rainfall per year, and that's about what we do. So I let a lot of water go down into my stock pond, but I like to capture every bit on our land, and that's what we need to do. From the first part, go home and look at our landscape, look at our ranch, look at it in home. Start out with a rain barrel if you have. First thing I did was take trash cans, and so you can use a trash can and take it from your neighbor and put it on yours or catch it from your roof and start using that water. Find out how good that water is, and then after you've sold on that, give that trash can back to them and get you a big system and get serious about that. But we can do that, and I think that's what we're going to need to do is we look at all these processes that can be done. We've got to take that and be stewards of every raindrop that comes on our place. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a second to get organized here.
If we could have the panelists come.
Tom, are you going to run the?
Sit at the table here. I'll run that back. Okay, this is your chance to ask some questions. We'll have the panelists sit at the table. As I said earlier, you can address questions either to individual panelists or the panel as a whole. I will come around. We'll start here. I will come around and with the microphone so that the questions can be recorded, because our experience has been that the questions sometimes are as valuable as the answers. So we'll start here.
I've been a lifelong Texan. I grew up in a German community 30 miles north of San Antonio. And my father, German father, stood outside the door of the bathroom with his ear against it and said, "That water's run 5 minutes, that's enough now." And it was, with the water pressure we had, it was that much bath water. Now, that was a low population area, and I survived the 50s drought when we were pumping air, and the population of Kendall County was very low. I find it rather curious that San Antonio is lauded as the great metropolitan area, because I just moved from there, thank goodness, and I was in a motel, a La Quinta motel, about this time in 2006, and an early riser being an old lady, and at 3 o'clock, La Quinta's sprinkler water was running off down the I-10. And I watched San Antonio struggle with its empires of McDonald's and its empires of Augustine grass taking over the whole countryside while the old oaks were bulldozed for the miles and miles of shopping centers that don't catch any water, that rush it off down the stream. And I'm wondering if the us up here, and I hear all the people that I my new people, my new neighbors, what I hear them say is that you tell those San Antonians they can't have our water because everybody believes we're providing this water for these automatic flush toilets that offset everything the low flow ever did, because you go to a theater in San Antonio and you may sit down and it'll flush, and you'll urinate and you'll get up and it'll flush, and as you go out the door it will flush. So you tell me again how good you guys are doing, because I think you deserve an F. I think the city that deserves something is Austin, Texas, because they're the rain harvest guys. They're the guys giving the rain barrels to their citizens, encouraging all kinds of conservation that San Antonio hasn't even thought of. So here's my horrible lecture, and now I've made a San Antonio enemy for sure, but I hope I've made friends of my new neighbors. Now, my question is, and I'm sorry for all this prologue, is if we start rain harvesting and doing all the wonderful things that you suggested, how is San Antonio going to support its Golf Association golf courses, because we'll be using all of it?
You go, Billy.
Oh, I love the monologue prior to the question. That was much better. But I do, even though you may say San Antonio is not, when you look at their per capita reduction, they have been very effective. Rainwater harvesting has not been in their lead, but it is one of the things that they are looking at and talking about. And that's something that Austin took a lead in. And I think we got to hold high Austin for its effort in that. But much of that has been in the outskirts of Austin, and where there's been a desperate need because there's no other source of water for some of those people. Are very limited. Water quality has been very poor. And so there's a need there. There's a deep aquifer that San Antonio's on top of that they enjoy that may not require it as quick. But all of us has got to be better stewards of that there. And for us, that's why I want us to catch that water on our land and only get use of it before we ever send it down to them. Then they can have the excess after that. Okay.
Okay. She's brought up some of the toughest issues in water conservation. If only enforcement were so easy that the minute we see the water waste going on, we can put a stop to it. But in San Antonio, people don't take it lightly any more than you do. When we were in a drought in 2006, we had 14,000 calls to the conservation department when people would see anything that they saw as not as efficient as it possibly could be. And we follow up with those. We have 5 enforcement officers who can ticket illegal water waste. Now, it's not always easy to catch it, though. So I can't guarantee you that it doesn't ever happen, but I can tell you that it's not acceptable in our city. Now, as for our golf courses, one of the things that's worked out, I'm not a golfer. I'll just say that right off. Don't golf. But our golf courses have been able to take advantage of being on our recycled water program, the treated effluent that goes down to our treatment plants. And our water system does not serve golf courses with potable water. We send them that treated effluent, and that's what they water the golf courses with. But I am all in favor of you keeping your water on the land, the way Billy described. I have to summarize with that. I like the way he described it. The pitch I give in San Antonio is calling it organic rainwater harvesting, that your absolute best bet for making sure that you are managing your home or your business or anything else well with your outdoor landscape is making sure that you are keeping that water absorbed into your soil and that you have adequate soil. So we pitch that a huge amount in San Antonio. It was one of our primary education pieces, and require that soil on our new construction. So you don't have it, you're not capturing that water like you should be after those rainfalls.
Thank you. Another question.
Hey, well, a while back I was reading, I think it was in a Parks and Wildlife magazine, but I'm not positive, that there was an awfully large percentage of our lakes and rivers here that you couldn't even eat the fish out of because of the amount of heavy metals in pollution. This seems like it was got to be as important as developing new water sources to clean these up and prevent it from happening further. And I'd like to find out what else being done in Texas to help that problem.
So we're interested not only in having enough water, but enough good quality water.
Well, definitely that's a big issue. We've been focusing primarily on quantity tonight in terms of water conservation, but obviously it's very important for us to maintain the quality of water that we have where we have existing clean water supplies and try to improve the ones where we have some pollution problems. And there have been strides, I think, in Texas in terms of cleaning up some of the most polluted waterways. You're absolutely right in that there are a large number of lakes in our state where there are fish consumption advisories, which means that basically the health department has advised people not to eat fish from those lakes, at least in certain quantities, because of things like mercury contamination, mercury levels. You know, frankly, from the Sierra Club's perspective, one of the things we're trying to do to prevent that problem from getting worse in terms of mercury is to prevent the building of new coal-fired power plants in the state, which are a big source of mercury, which I think will just exacerbate the problem we already have, while we're also trying to begin the process of getting the existing coal plants to reduce their emissions so that you don't have as much of a problem there. But it, unfortunately, with mercury, of course, that is a long-term problem. Over a very long period of time, you know, if there are no additional inputs of mercury, you'll see levels begin to drop, but that's not going to help our generation and probably the next couple of generations in terms of a big way. You know, unfortunately, we have to deal with some of the simple facts that some problems have already been created. It's going to take a while for those problems to, you know, take care of themselves to some extent. But by, you know, let's not exacerbate the problem by just adding things like new coal-fired power plants that are going to make the situation even worse. I just want to say one thing in, you know, as a representative of the Sierra Club who's had a lot of criticism of San Antonio over the years for various reasons, I do want to point out that what we're really saying about how we are impressed with what San Antonio has done is that if you look at their gallons per capita per day of water use over the past 20 years, they've made some dramatic reductions in gallons per capita per day water use. Our analysis shows that if all of the cities in Texas were to achieve the gallons per capita per day record of San Antonio, we wouldn't need to build any of these new water supplies that are called for in the 2007 water plan. And that's why we praise San Antonio, because if you think San Antonio's not perfect, you're probably right. But if you want to see some other cities whose records are abysmal, I can give you a list. Okay.
Okay, another question. Any over here? Well, we'll go here to this gentleman here.
I have a question again on the water harvesting. Is that a workable solution to cities like San Antonio or Kerrville? And where do you put these tanks? I know you need about 20,000-gallon tanks.
It is workable. It's not maybe the preferred method right now. If we have another source of water that is available, it is being done in certain cities in the United States, not in the United States, but in other parts of the world. And we can do that in communities where we can combine our waterfall, our water coming off our roofs into one larger collection system and then use it as if it was our total or only water supply. And so it can be done. It is being done in some small areas, but The problem is when it rains, we have to have a large catchment. Right now, with our, we have a lake that has lots of catchment storage in it. We look at aquifers, they have lots of storage right there. When we start building something that is going to store water that I'd like to have as far as rainwater, if it's not an open pond or open lake, which is our way of catching rainwater, then off of our soil, off of our land. But if we start catching off our roof, then the cost of holding that water is difficult. We talked about watering our football field there in Menard with rainwater. We can do that. We have enough roof surface, but we'd have to fill up our gymnasium to have enough water to supply that to water our turf with. And so it's just a cost factor that we get into that makes it expensive. On a small individual or in a small group of houses, we can do that. I can put in a 200,000 gallon collection system for not a whole lot of money, and then we can supply our whole needs for our neighborhood. But on large areas, we're going to have to go back into an open pond type method or depend on our aquifer.
Okay, I have a question here in the back.
Where do I talk about? Oh, okay. Hi. I was in a local truck stop not too long ago, and the little girl came in, and she turned on the water, and there wasn't enough soap, so she ran across, and all the time the water's running. And, I mean, this just went on and on and on. And then the next woman did the same thing. So a simple act of washing hands, the water was just streaming. So I was wondering, in the future, or is there something in the works that sets commercial standards for how the faucets work and how the toilets work and how, are there going to be commercial standards? Is that in the works?
The answer to that is yes. There are actual research studies on those things. And one of the areas of research is those automatic things that turn on and off when people walk up and put their hands on them and then come off. And the automatic toilet flushers that sometimes irritate us because it flushes several times as you're not wanting it to. So believe it or not, across the country, there are other communities that are worried about these things and are combining to do research projects on those very things where they put up very accurate meters and then check and see which of these technologies work and what's the benchmark that we should all be going toward. So there is some very good research on it. I can't promise that all the technology is perfect. You know, it's the American way. We put out all these technologies and then you find out, well, that one didn't work so well. Like the early low-flow toilets weren't so good. Now we have really good ones on the market. I think that's going to be true of a lot of these faucets and things, too, the new gadgets and gizmos that come out. But we're researching it, that Alliance for Water Efficiency that I mentioned, one of their jobs is going to be that clearinghouse of making sure there's a central place to be able to find the results of that as you're trying to buy products.
I'd like to add with that, education, though, is a key for all of it. We talk about who uses water. We turn the water on for our landscape. Landscape will take what we give it, so we give it a whole lot. But if we look at our next generation and on down, if they're going to be very short of water, we're going to have to do some things now and pass that on and teach them. And that's why it's very critical what both of these are doing from a state or a city perspective as master naturalists and others that can be educators of our own children or those around us. It's very critical that we teach them to be stewards and be very conservative with and appreciate what we did. My secretary grew up in some very tough times with the drought of the 50s. She has gallon milk jugs. She stores gallon milk jugs and fills them with rainwater and just uses them for those plants that need it. Even though she's got a well and she's tied into the city, she has, from back history and from where she learns to be conservative. And that's what we got to pass on to that next generation so they can do the same.
Okay, we have a time for just a couple more questions. I have one up here.
I'd like to ask John Sutton if you could perhaps give us an example or two of some industry in Texas that is doing water conservation programs. We know cities are working on it. We ourselves are rainwater harvesters. We know that whole story, but what I haven't heard is anything about the large industries, which surely must use a tremendous amount of water, Can you give us some examples of some in Texas that actually are conserving water?
Sure. I don't know if I can think of any names offhand, but in general, industry's been doing a lot for a long time because for them it's economics, okay? Later down the road, they found it also made good for good community relations and marketing as well. But there's a lot of industries that reuse water. They find it high-tech, chip manufacturing, need very pure, very clean water. And so they find it more cost-effective since they, even if it's potable water, no matter the source, they have to clean it before they use it. They're going to use it and clean it as much as possible before they discharge it. So that's one, and they use a tremendous amount of water, but they're also using it as efficiently and as effectively as they can as well. And so we're going to, I think one of the big areas of water savings we're going to see in the future is going to be from reclaimed and recycled water, whether it's reclaimed waters like San Antonio and many other cities around the state are doing about providing treated effluent to their customers, or industries and commercial entities that are reusing it on site before they discharge anything. And a lot of that has been going on for a long period of time, but we're going to see more and more of that as well. So. One program the Texas Water Development Board recently developed, and there's some information on the back, or you can get it on our website as well, is the Rainwater Catchment Award. And one of the first recipient, actually, was given last month of this program, was an industry in the Houston area. So,
I'd like to add a couple of things in response to your question. One of the things that I didn't mention earlier that I like for everybody to know is that part of our Texas Living Waters Project, in which we partner with Environmental Defense and National Wildlife Federation, is that we hold annual conferences on water, as well as usually a regional conference that's rotated around different regions of the state. This year's annual conference, which is primarily being sponsored by Environmental Defense with a number of the rest of the organizations involved, is going to be April 18th in Austin at the Lady Bird Johnson Wildflower Center. And the entire focus of this year's conference is going to be on water conservation. And there are going to be panels and discussion about both what we call municipal water conservation, like San Antonio, other cities, other retail water suppliers, but also industrial water conservation. So there'll be some examples discussed there about how different industries are becoming more efficient in their use of water. And I think a number of industries do have fairly good records. I do want to point out one thing that we're going to have to be very careful about, I think, in the future in this state, well, the present and the future, is that because there's a lot of discussion right now about how the state of Texas is going to meet its future energy needs with a growing population, that all the decisions that are going to be made about sources of energy are going to have impacts in terms of water. There are certain sources of energy like coal-fired power plants, like nuclear power plants, that are heavy users of water, and others much less so. So there is a relationship between energy efficiency, water conservation, water decisions, and energy decisions that we all have to be mindful of.
Thank you. We have any final question? Okay. Here we go. A final question.
Yeah, listen, just two points real quick. I'm here with the City of Junction, and just for example, we're starting a new water treatment plant. And as part of getting the Water Board's approval, we did agree to do some recycling in that plant that had not been in the original design. So there's an example of things happening at the local level where we're trying to conserve. But I'd like to ask you this question. Have you encountered small communities that have very effective conservation programs that then have an adverse effect on their revenue base? And that, in turn, prevents them from making the infrastructure investments that they need to make and from servicing the debt that they incur for infrastructure improvements.
That's a concern we hear often from water utilities about, well, if I have an active and an effective conservation program, I'm going to reduce water use, I'll reduce revenue, and then how do I cover my cost of operation and such. Water conservation cannot be looked at as a standalone program. It's part, should be part of a water supplier's or utility's overall operation and management. And so if you're taking a look at conserving water, you need to take a look at water rate structure. Very often, with a tiered rate structure, those people that are putting the impact on your system, okay, should may be necessary for them to pay a higher rate for the impact they're placing on your system. Those people that are using smaller amounts of water that aren't placing an impact on your system may be paying at a lower rate per their usage. And so a utility really needs to take a look at it. You can have an effective program without, when we've seen studies also, that overall things would balance off and a utility would be taking in the same amount of revenue by just restructuring their rates. And so that's really important. If someone takes a look at conservation, you can't do it just by itself because, yes, you possibly will have an impact on your revenues. So you need to take a look at how your entire operation is going to work together. And that's another thing for utilities. Energy was brought up earlier, too. When you're talking about water conservation, for the most part, you're looking at also saving energy, conserving energy, using less energy. The most expensive part of any utility's program or operation is energy for the pumping, the treatment, and the distribution of that water. And so there's water, and so there's cost savings also. If you're pumping and treating less water, well, then you're probably going to have some savings also in your overall structure. So, but it has to take a look at it at a complete package. Either one as a standalone really isn't going to work and be effective.
On behalf of the sponsors of the Texas Water Symposium, I want to thank our panelists this evening for coming to the Texas Tech campus here at Junction and sharing their insights with us. And most importantly, I want to thank all of you for coming out on this evening to hear what was said, to ask your questions, and participate in this program.